Welcome back to Baptist Basics University on the course Gospel of John. This will be lesson number 20, Christ Heals a Blind Man. We'll be in John chapter 9, and we'll be trying to get through the whole chapter, all 41 verses. Once again, I'm Matthew Gage, founder, president, professor, web designer, one-man show for BaptistBasics.org, Baptist Basics University. And that's not to say I'm good at any of those. It's just the way things are. This is the fifth lesson I've got a chance to record in a row. Don't often get a chance to sit down and record these. Life gets busy. So if you're listening to all these in a row, if my voice sounds a little bit weaker, you probably could note it getting weaker. A lot of talking to do all in a row like this. And my voice hasn't been very strong lately to begin with. But finally get a chance where it's a little bit quiet. When you got two little munchkins running around the house, it's hard to stay quiet. I got two little boys, 3.5 and 1.5, and it's hard to get a little quiet time to do some recording. I don't think you'd want them hollering and stuff in the background. So, the hollering would be my wife. No, I'm just kidding. Never mind. Excuse me. Well, I get giddy after I do this for a while. John chapter 9, verse 1. John chapter 9 is an amazing chapter. Most often, when the miracles of Christ are dealt with, it's very briefly, very limited detail. Jesus just heals somebody. And maybe a little bit of the story about it in context. Maybe some of the story, what happens afterwards. But usually, it takes place very quickly. There's usually not a lot of information given on the people or what happened. It's pretty rare to have a whole chapter devoted to one miracle. And that's what we're going to have in this chapter. It's going to deal entirely with the healing of a blind man and the events afterwards. What's going to happen? Jesus is going to heal the blind man. He's basically going to be put on trial before the Pharisees. And they don't believe he was a blind man. They don't believe his story. And basically what we're going to end up seeing is the hatred the Jews have for Christ. And in contrast to their hatred, we see the love of Christ for the helpless. You want to see who comes out looking better in this tale, or tale, maybe a bad word, in this episode in the life of Christ. The Jews look bad. The Jews look really bad. And yet we see the mercy of a loving God shown in this. Now, this is appears to be a continuation of the events of the previous chapter, still at the Feast of Tabernacles, probably not the same day. We do know that this occurs on the Sabbath, that's in verse 14, because it says it was Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. So we know that it is the Sabbath day, and so probably the Sabbath day immediately following the feast. So what we see is that on the Sabbath day is that Jesus is going to heal a blind man, and that gets the events going. So let's get started in verse 1. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. Now, let me kind of go into this a little bit, what I think is going on here. Remember, there's still throngs of people there from the feast. There's still a lot of stuff going on. And I've got a feeling this blind beggar was probably well known. I think he's probably situated somewhere near the temple, maybe in it. I don't know. I kind of doubt that. Maybe, at the gate going into the temple. And, everybody probably knew him as they came by. And because of all these pilgrimages people made to Jerusalem, I'm sure many people remember seeing this blind man there. He's been blind for a long time, and he's probably been sitting in the same place for years and years and years. And this was a great opportunity for him to take advantage of people's generosity. So I've got a feeling this takes place up near the temple, that this blind beggar was a very well-known fixture. And it's, verse 2, and his disciples asked him, saying, "Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now, what this goes to, there was a Jewish notion that everything bad happened because of sin. Kind of, I guess you come at that logically. So they said, well, he's blind. Well, either he did something bad or maybe his parents did something bad. And, you know, somebody had to do something bad to punish this poor man with blindness. Now, either he's being punished or his parents are being punished with it. But somebody's being punished because of their evil, wicked sin. So verse 3, Jesus answered, neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. So, Jesus, or we'll keep reading, let's read the next two verses. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So what Jesus is saying is, no, fellas, he's not blind because of sin. He didn't do anything. His parents didn't do anything. He's blind for a purpose. Now, God in his providential will allowed this man to be blind for a reason. And we know the reason, that the works of God should be made manifest in him. So the works of God should be made manifest, should be shown, should be obvious in him. Where can we go with that? It's either that he's born blind so we can perform this miracle so everybody can see the miracle, or maybe that's what it was going to take to get this man saved. I wonder if maybe that's the works of God being made manifest in him, was the works of God and salvation coming in him needed him to be humbled in blindness. Maybe. I don't know. That may be more of a stretch. Just a theory. If Jesus says, I work the work sent me while it's day, and not cometh no man work. So he's saying, look, I'm here. I'm doing the works of God. I have to do it here. And it says, while I'm here, I'm the light of the world. So I am truth. I am God revealed to the world. I am goodness revealed to the world. So I think what he's telling them is there's going to be a work done, and I've got to do it. So verse 6, when he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. Now, we're going to read verse 7. I keep stopping early. Verse 7. And said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which by interpretation sent. He went his way therefore and washed and came seeing. So Jesus heals the blind man. How does he do it? Now, Jesus never did the same miracle the same way twice. God rarely did the same thing the same way twice. All throughout the scripture, God works in different ways. Why? Because the methods aren't not as important as it is God's power. So in this case, instead of just saying, hey, blind man, now you can see, or, you know, touching his eyes, he does something a little bit different. The only time he did this, he spits on the ground, which the Jews at the time had a belief that spit had medicinal powers. I guess, you know, I heard somebody joke and said that, you know, a mother's spit had the same chemical formula as 409, you know, because mom's always spitting on something, you know, clean something. But anyway, regardless, I guess it spit shined your shoes. But anyway, back, you know, the less enlightened era of ancient times, they evidently that people thought saliva, spit, had medicinal powers, and especially with eyes, evidently. So, okay. And so he makes spittle and anoints it on his eyes. So he's this could be a sign, as he's saying that there's something over his eyes and blindness that has to be removed. Is this saying that in salvation, is this a sign like a, or a sign, but an illustration perhaps of salvation, in that we were blind, but we can maybe see once the washing of the Spirit and the Word washes away that clay, that flesh from our eyes, and maybe something along those lines. That may be a little bit of a stretch, but anyway, Jesus spits on the ground, plays with it, makes mud out of it, and then wipes it onto the guy's eyes and says, okay, now go to the pool of Siloam and wash. Now, my theory is on this, that this probably takes place, this beggar probably was up around the temple area. I may be wrong about that, but regardless, the temple area was kind of on the north, a little bit to the northeastern side of Jerusalem. And he sends him to wash in the pool of Siloam. The pool of Siloam is on the southeastern side. It's actually outside the city, a little bit outside the city, south of town. So he actually makes this guy work for it. is kind of an interesting thing. Now, that has nothing to do with salvation, but Jesus kind of makes him earn this healing, I guess. I guess wants to see how faithful he's going to be, test, see if he'll be obedient. But Jesus sends him down, pulls Sloan, actually makes him walk halfway across town, maybe, or go somewhere. It goes a long way. Now, they found the Pool Siloam. It's down there, south town. There's steps going down into it, so he could easily find it and with help, or even feel his way down to the water and then wash his eyes, or wash the mud off his eyes. And as soon as he did it, he could see. Wow, what an amazing miracle Jesus has done. This blind man can see. Can you imagine? I think this guy was probably a well-known beggar, so everyone is amazed. Wow, this man can see. Why, you know, hey, John, isn't that the blind man? What's he? He can see. What happened? You know, can you imagine the talk that's going around? The commotion that this would have raised. Verse 8, the neighbors therefore, and they which had seen him that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. But he said, I am he. So all this debate's going on now. So everybody's excited. And everybody says, now, yeah, no, this may not be him. It just may be his evil twin brother or something. It looks like him. It can't be the blind man because he can see. So this has got to be somebody that looks like him. Maybe somebody new in town. But he said, no, I am the blind man. So, the commotion's going. He's got people's attention. In verse 10, therefore said they unto him, how were thine eyes opened? So what happened? How can you see now? Verse 11, and he answered and said, a man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed mine eyes and said unto me, go to the Pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed and I received sight. So he said, look, he just tells a story. It's kind of like giving our testimony, you know. Let's say, how do you get saved? Well, I'll tell you how I was saved. I was a four-year-old boy who was convicted of a sin, knew he was going on his way to hell if something didn't happen. And I learned about Jesus dying for me, and then I accepted that free gift of salvation, and I was saved. It's kind of, he just gives his testimony. Hey, Jesus, this guy named Jesus came along, put mud in my eye, and told me to wash. I washed, and now I see. So verse 12, and they said unto him, where is he? He said, I know not. So they said, well, where did he go? We want to talk to him. So at this point, he's pretty much, we'll get down to it. In verse 14, where is he? He said, I know. I don't know where he went. So I think Jesus may be using this to maybe create a commotion in a way, but without him being present. Then verse 13, they brought to the Pharisees him who aforetime was blind. Poor blind man. He's about to be grilled. He's about to be put on trial. Verse 14, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. So evidently this is probably not still the Sabbath day, I guess, by the reference there. So this may be the next day or two. Somebody got word of the Pharisees. They came and got them, and they said, we got to know about this. You know, how were you healed on the Sabbath day? So in verse 15, then again, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them, he put clay upon my eyes, and I washed and do see. Notice it keeps getting shorter every time. He repeats it, but it keeps getting shorter. So it's like, well, what happened? Can you imagine they're demanding? He's on. I just imagine it's just like, you know, like you see in the old like detective shows. You know, they got the bright light shining in his face. Now, where were you on the night of April 24th? You know, I can just imagine. I mean, they're just grilling this poor guy. And what's amazing to me? Can you imagine his excitement? He's just so excited he can see. He's so excited for all these years. He's been just a helpless, blind beggar, no good to anybody. Now he can see. He's now a whole human being, and nobody's excited. In fact, he's on trial for being healed. So he tells the story again. So he said, hey, he put mud in my eye, and I washed, and I see. Verse number 16. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. They say unto the blind man again, getting tongue-tied. Verse 17, they say unto the blind man again, what sayest thou of him? And he that he hath opened thine eyes. And he said, he is a prophet. So we see a bunch of different opinions. We've got one group of Pharisees that says, this man cannot be of God. He must be evil and wicked because he did this on the Sabbath day. If he was really of God, he would have had the Sabbath day. Well, they're kind of worshiping the creation instead of the creator. They're holding up Sabbath higher than God, okay? A little problem there with their thinking. And then the others of the Pharisees and Jews said, well, how can this man be a sinner if he just made this guy blind? Or made this blind man see? They were focused on the miracle, not on this supposed transgression. They actually pretty much had the right interpretation of what was going on. They were focusing on the wonder of the miracle. Can you imagine... a miracle's taking place. This just doesn't happen. Blind people just don't have their sight restored, especially back in these days. I mean, there was not the type of surgery and stuff that we can do. I remember seeing a deal where they had done an implant in some guy's eye with like these light receptacles, kind of like similar to a camera. And that the guy could actually, he couldn't see his... it was like, I want to say it was like 9 boxes, and it was just varying shades of black and gray, but it actually let him see something. I mean, that's a miracle of modern science. But this man, back in those days, was flat out healed of his blindness. Can you imagine? Boy, that right there, hey, forget everything else. This is a miracle, folks. Let's find this Jesus. This guy must be a Messiah. This guy must be sent of God. But no, he might have done this on the Sabbath day. Just how strange men's thinking can be, that they can worship the day that's supposed to set aside for God instead of worshiping God. That's how mixed up we get. You know what? Instead of worshiping God, we worship the things about him. Instead of worshiping God, we'll worship a preacher. Instead of worshiping God, we'll worship a church. Instead of worshiping God, we'll worship music. Got to be careful. Where's our focus? Is it really truly on God? We may be guilty of the same things as the Pharisees. So verse 18. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and they received a sight until they called the parents of him that had received sight. So like they didn't even believe. Like, okay, this guy's just pulling her leg. He's lying. Let's get some other witnesses. They went and found his parents. Verse 19, they asked him, saying, is this your son who ye say was born blind? How then doth he now see? Now they're on trial. Like, is this your son? Was he blind now? How can he see? What's going on here? What did y'all do? They're kind of on trial now. Verse 20, his parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son. Like, yeah, we know him. But that he was born blind. Verse 21, but by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age, ask him. He shall speak for himself. It's like, we don't know. We just know something has changed. We know he was blind. Now he can see. We don't know how it happened. We weren't there. Why don't you just ask him? I like it. It's like, he's of age. So that means he was, I believe that's 30 years old, would be a fully, would have been fully of age. And considered a full manhood to the Jews at the time, which is part of the reason Jesus' ministry didn't start until he was 30. So he's probably 30 plus years old, 30, 40, something like that. Average life expectancy in those days wasn't much beyond 30. So, and especially for a blind man. So he's probably right around 30 to 40 years old, I would say, just conjecturally guessing, okay? So, where are we at here now? I'm getting ahead of myself. Verse 22. These words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. So the parents really were just pawning or passing the buck, okay? They didn't want any part of this. They didn't want to face the repercussions that could face. I believe they wanted to believe their son. I don't know if they were there. Maybe they didn't see it. I think they wanted to believe their son, but they knew if they said, well, that's what he said, they're kind of dumping it all back on him. And the main reason, because by this time there was a punishment for being a follower of Christ, you got kicked out of the synagogue. You weren't allowed to worship. I mean, if you were kicked out of the synagogue, which was, if you're not familiar with that, I guess that'd be kind of like a Jewish church, okay? If you were kicked out of the synagogue, you were going to be blackballed in the whole community. This would be very, very bad. It's like being kicked out of a church nowadays. Can you imagine the repercussions of that? So they're afraid, so they just pass it back off on him. So, verse 24, they the man that was blind and said to him, "Give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner." Verse 25, he answered and said, "Whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that is where I was blind, now I see." So it's like, you know, regardless of what you say, he says, "Man, I was healed." So, I don't know what to think. I don't know all the truth. I just know something happened. Like they say, give God the praise. Like, don't say Jesus did it. Say God did it. But he said, look, he said, you know, I guess God did heal me, but Jesus is the one that did it. I mean, Jesus is the one who put the mud in my eyes. Boy, how true the kind of the truth of that is. It's like, when I got saved, I was about 4 years old. Boy, I didn't understand it all. Now here I am some 23 or so years removed from that. I think that's right. Yeah. 23 years removed from that. And I'm still learning about it. If I should live to be 50 years older now and I should live to be 77, I'd still be learning about it. If I should live to be 1,000 years old, I'll still be learning about it. I just know it happened. And then I'll go back and worry about the details. Well, you got to watch it. Some people, well, the way they preach salvation, you need a master's degree in theology to be saved. It just takes childlike faith. Get saved and then learn about it. You don't have to learn all about salvation to be saved. Now, there's some certain things you need to know. You need to know you're a sinner. You need to know there's a penalty for the sin. You need to know Jesus died for you. And you need to know that through faith you can be saved. But, well, you want to get into all the rest of that stuff. Well, why don't we do that after you get saved? Then we'll go into all that. All right, now into verse 26. Then said they to him again, What did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? Now, at this point, the blind man has grown impatient. You kind of hear it even in the words here. He answered them, verse 27, I have told you already, and ye did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Will ye also be his disciples? So it's like, well, what's the point in telling you again? You didn't believe me the first time. Why do I have to keep saying it? You think I'm going to change my story or something? Which maybe that's the kind of trick they're pulling. I mean, police officers, interrogators still pull that same trick now. They just keep making tell a story to hopefully something changes so that they can pin it on you. But, maybe that's still, but he grows impatient. Like, look, are you going to believe it? If I keep telling you, are you finally going to believe it? So, verse 28, then they reviled him and said, thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. So, like, okay, well, you're going to be his follower. We're going to be followers of Moses. And, which is basically the way they wanted to hold to their traditions and the Mosaic law, and they wanted to reject Christ. So, verse 29, for we know that God spake unto Moses, as for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. So, we know about Moses. We don't know about this guy. Well, Moses did a lot of miraculous things, and Jesus just did a miraculous thing too, and they don't want to listen to him. So it's kind of a strange statement there. Verse 29. Read that one. Verse 30. This the man answered and said unto them, why herein is a marvelous thing that ye know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened up my eyes. So he's saying, he says, look, he says, how come you? How come there's been a miracle come, how come you don't know where he came from? You don't know where his power is when right here before you is proof. Right here before you is a miracle. If he's just human, how in the world did he open my eyes? He has to be sent from God. That was part of the purpose of the miracles of Christ, was to prove his deity, was to prove his power. And that's what the blind man even gets it. I mean, he's like, look, this man must be of God because how else could I see? And let's see here. Verse 31. Now we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. So the continue on that same thought, you know. He says, look, he says, God heareth the sinners. God won't hear a sinner, so this man can't be a sinner. Only God, only God could do that miracle. So he has to be on God's side if this miracle took place. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. So it's like, look, in all history, have you ever heard of a blind man getting his sight back? But this man just did. So if he's not of God, he couldn't do anything. He has to have the power of God. That's the blind man's logic. What powerful logic this man has. Just look at the life. You want proof of the power of the gospel? Look at the changed lives. You want proof of the power of Christ? Look at the changed lives. Look at the miracles he's worked in people's lives. Look at the drunkards who are now model citizens. Look at the people who were once slaves to sin who are now faithfully serving God. You want proof? Look at the miracles. Verse 34. They answered and said unto him, thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? It's like, wait, you're a sinner? How can you dare teach us? And the born in sins, I think, goes back to that he was blind, and they still think that was some kind of punishment, you know. So, like, well, we know you were born in sin because you were blind. Now, who are you in the world to teach us? So, and they cast him out, the end of verse 34. They cast him out. So, they throw him out of the room, and I suppose cast him out of the synagogue and all that. So, I mean, this guy just went from all the excitement, wow, everybody, look, I can see, I can't believe this, to being thrown out of the room. Can you imagine his dejection? Now, I think you see even more Christ's compassion here, because Christ follows up, verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? Well, this is, look at that. Jesus heard he cast him out. So Jesus finds out that he's cast out, finds out that this bad stuff had happened to this man that he had shown compassion on, that he had healed. And he goes, and it says, when he found him. So he was looking for him. It wasn't just he happened to, oh, hey, well, hey, there's that blind guy healed. Well, hey, how you doing? It's like, no, he went and found him again. Christ was searching him out again. Christ doesn't just search us out for salvation. He doesn't just come and bring salvation. He comes to help us in our lives. He comes to be there in our hours of need. When he found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? So, says, do you believe on the Son of God? And listen, the blind man doesn't even know this is Jesus. He just walks up to him and says, hey, son, do you believe on the Son of God? Do you believe in Jesus? Do you think he's the Messiah? What do you think? Verse 36, and he answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? So I think he's like, well, where is he? I want to believe on him. I want to know more about him. Where is he? Where is this man that revealed my sight? Verse 37, Jesus said to him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. Jesus says, you're looking at him. In verse 38, and he said, Lord, I believe, and he worshipped him. The blind man falls at the feet of the one who restored his sight, not just physically, but now spiritually, as the man puts his faith in Christ, as the man is saved, as he acknowledges Christ as God, as the Messiah. Verse 39, and Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see might see not might see, and they that which see might be made blind. So Jesus has come to turn the world upside down. He's going to give light to the ones who need it, and the ones that think they got light, he's going to turn it out on. There's going to be a division take place. Listen, Jesus wasn't all about, you know, fluffy, feely, let's all come together, sing good kumbaya. Couldn't get that out. He wasn't all about this love and peace and happiness. Jesus is divisive. And one of the things he divided was those that seemingly had the light, he turned the light out on them. And those who wanted the light, those who were blind, who were willing to acknowledge their need of sight, he's come to give them sight. Because, you know, that's the first step to salvation, is to realize you need it. You have to realize you're a sinner. You have to realize that you can't go to heaven. You have to realize there's a punishment for that sin. That's what's being talked about here. It's not physically speaking. He's saying, you know, there's people here that think they have the light, but they don't. And there's people here that don't have the light, but they want it, and I'm here to give it to them. Verse 40. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said to him, are we blind also? So I think they take offense. They took offense at what he said in verse 39. It's like, well, wait a minute. Are we blind? What are you talking to us? Are you calling us names? How dare you? Verse 41. Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say we see, therefore your sin remaineth. Now let me explain this a little bit. Blind, the blindness there is not having the truth. So he's saying you're blind. He said if you would admit that you're blind, we could get somewhere. But as long as you think you can see, you don't realize the state that you're in. Have no sin there is talking about if you were blind, you would have no sin. So that you wouldn't be guilty because you wouldn't know, you wouldn't understand. But it said, but you say we see, which is they're holding falsehood as truth. They think they have the truth of salvation. They think they can gain salvation. They think they can please God by obeying all these tenets of the law, of obeying the teachings of the rabbis. That's why they say, well, you say we see, but they're holding falsehood. It's a false light. It's not true. And he says, your sin remaineth. You're guilty because you don't realize you're even blind. And if you would realize you're blind and want to do something about it, we could do something about it. That's the general teaching. There's not maybe a perfect explanation of it, but that's the general thought there. What a powerful story we've had in this amazing story. A bunch of people who wanted to get at Christ so bad, they're willing to throw out a wondrous miracle that had been performed, willing to cast out an amazing man, this blind man, willing to just cast him out and throw him to the side. What hatred these men must have had for Christ and his work. But as I say, we see the love of Christ. That Christ would take time to heal this blind beggar that most of these men probably never would have given second thought to. They never stopped to talk to him. They never stopped and tried to help him obey the Mosaic law. No, they just passed right on by. But Jesus took time to help this young man, to heal him. And then, in an hour of need, an hour of rejection, Christ returns to reveal himself to him. What a heart our Savior has. He comes to us not only to bring us salvation, but to be there when we need Him. That's an application you can definitely take, I believe, from this passage. What an amazing story. What an amazing miracle. I love the story there of the blind man that's healed. The wondrous miracle that was performed. The wondrous, wondrous actions taken by our Savior. Listen, we serve a mighty God. No problem's too big for Him. Hopeless cases can be solved. Insurmountable problems can disappear before our mighty God. And we're so fortunate that great and mighty God looks down in compassion and mercy on us and wants to help us and wants to be on our side, even wants to save wretched sinners like us. What a mighty God we serve. What a mighty example of it we see in this chapter. Well, we'll call it an end on that, and we hope to see you in the next lesson. I appreciate you listening.